Please come back to Numbers chapter 22, verse 22 with me today as we continue this amazing story about how a donkey tried to talk sense into a prophet whose head was being turned by riches. I am going to read to you once again from 2 Peter about this story before we pick up the text. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse number 15, where Peter is complaining about false teachers, false prophets, greedy individuals trying to fleece the flock, take advantage of them for their own personal gain. And he describes them in this way: forsaking the right way, they've gone astray. They followed the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved gain for wrongdoing, but was rebuked for his own transgression. A speechless donkey spoke with human voice and restrained or nipped in the bud the prophet's madness. So the apostle Peter says, it's really bad when people who claim to be leaders for God get their heads turned by greed and engage in sinful behavior. And on one occasion, God tried to use a donkey to stop it before it got out of control. And so here's that story. Let me just read to you the first portion that we talked about last time as background to where we're going to pick up. Numbers 22:22. But God's anger was kindled because he went, not because he went to go down, because he was given permission to do that, but because of his attitude. He was already starting to think about how he could get the cash from Balak. And so the angel of the Lord, the angel of He Who Is, took his stand in the way as his adversary. Now, he was riding on the donkey. His two servants were with him. The donkey saw the angel of He Who Is standing in the road with a drawn sword in his hand. Nobody else sees it, only the donkey. The donkey turned aside out of the road and went into the field. So it tries to swerve around this scary stranger with the sword. So Balaam struck the donkey to turn her back into the road, probably with his little donkey whip. Then the angel of He Who Is stood in a narrow place between the vineyards with a wall on either side. And when the donkey saw the angel of He Who Is, she pushed against the wall and pressed Balaam's foot against the wall. So he struck her again, and I'm sure he did it with more force this time because he was angry he got hurt. Then the angel of He Who Is went ahead and stood in a narrow place where there was no way to turn either to the right or the left. And when the donkey saw the angel of He Who Is, she lay down under Balaam. So she just plops down like the end of the day's journey. She's not going to move forward because there is this angel with a sword in the way. And there's no place to go around. So at this point, Balaam's anger was kindled. He becomes really furious. And it says he struck the donkey with his staff. He starts wailing on the poor beast with his stick that he uses for walking purposes. And it is at this point that God creates a miracle. Now, I am a lover of animals. I have always been a cat person, and my wife and I have had many cats in our marriage. We know all of them have special personalities, and each one of them is unique. Those of you that are dog people or pet people of any sort, more than likely horse people, you know that a lot of these animals that God designed to be companions with humanity at the very beginning of time, they can be quite unique And they clearly think. They think on a very basic level, maybe like a preschooler or a kindergartner. But they can't talk to us. They can't speak to us in human language. Well, God allows this donkey to speak its mind. I don't believe this is like him, God using this donkey like a puppet. I think he just simply allows this donkey to suddenly have the voice capability of a human being. Verse 28, so he who is opened the mouth of the donkey, and she said to Balaam, what have I done to you that you've struck me these three times? See, why are you being so unfair? Why are you being so mean? And Balaam said back to the donkey, which is amazing. I mean, he's probably in total shock of the whole situation. Doesn't realize that, hey, my donkey just talked to me for the first time in decades. He said back, because you've made a fool out of me. I wish I had a sword in my hand, for then I would kill you. Now that is like really shocking to me. We're about to find out that he and this donkey have had a long-term relationship. Donkeys live on average into their early 30s. Some can live into their early 40s. And so it is more than likely, based on what's coming up in the next verse, that these two have been around each other for three decades. And in a moment of anger, Balaam expresses the desire to murder his donkey just because it scraped his foot against a wall and now is plopped down on the path and won't move. And he's already wailed on it, like I said. He's already beat on it. The poor animal's probably got a lot of pain, a lot of bruising. And so, with God's grace, the donkey speaks again. The donkey said to Balaam, am I not your donkey on which you've ridden all your life long to this day? Now, that tells me that Balaam is not an old guy. If he's had this donkey his adult life, then that probably only puts him in his 40s or so. If he had it from a teenager, he might actually only be in his 30s. So he's not an ancient guy. And so the donkey says, I've been around with you for your whole adult life. Is it my habit to treat you this way? Have I ever run off the road, scraped your foot against a wall, plopped down and refused to move? Have you ever had that experience with me before? And that's when something clicks in Balaam's head, I think. He said, no. Now, imagine how amazing this is. Exactly as Peter said, that a beast that usually can't speak has chided a prophet of God and made him see the light. And so God uses this exact moment to teach him the lesson. Verse 31, then he who is opened the eyes of Balaam, and he saw the angel of he who is standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand. Now think about that. The angel's been there the whole time, popped in twice before this. But here is the angel of he who is, only a matter of feet in front of Balaam. Balaam's standing there over his laying down donkey, still holding his rod in his hand, and he looks up, and there is the powerful angel of the Lord, glowing with the glory of God, with a big, shiny, perhaps flaming sword in his hand, glaring at Balaam. Now, how scary would that be? So he bowed down and fell on his face and appropriately so. The angel of He Who Is said to him, "Why have you struck your donkey these three times? Behold, I have come out to oppose you because your way is perverse before me." Now, remember that angels are messengers. In fact, that's what the word angel means in Greek. The Hebrew equivalent means the same thing, malek, a messenger. And so when they appear, they very often speak on behalf of God in the first person. I've often used this example that if you and I were in the room together and suddenly my phone rang and I listened to it for a second and then I held it out to you and said, "Here, it's your mom." You would not think that the phone is your mom. But the phone would talk to you, and you would accept it as a direct message from mom. And so that's actually what an angel is. An angel is the tool of communication between God and whoever is receiving the message. And so that's why it's in the first person. So I came out to oppose you because your way is perverse. It's twisted. You've got twisted thinking going on here. You are going beyond bounds. The donkey saw me and turned aside before me these three times. If she had not turned aside from me, surely just now I would have killed you and let her live. So effectively, your donkey just saved your life because I gave you three chances to knock it off with the bad attitude, thinking about how you're going to make money off of cursing these people when I told you you can only say what I tell you to say. So Balaam is now, I think, properly chided, but certainly he should be terrified. So Balaam said to the angel of He Who Is, "I have sinned." Now that's good. That's confession. "For I did not know that you stood in the road against me. Now therefore, if it is evil in your sight, I will turn back." And that's good too, that he offered that. But God has something else in mind. Remember, I told you, God wants a blessing to be placed on Israel, to be put on the record, that will include some very important prophecies. Prophecies about the upcoming kingdom of David and Solomon, as well as prophecies about the Messiah himself. So Balaam has a job. Unfortunately, and again, this is like a spoiler alert here for those of you who may not know the story. Balaam is going to go bad again. He may seem repentant and confessing at this point, but as he continues on his trip, he's going to let the greed get the best of him again. And it will cost him his physical life, and my guess is, based on the context of the story, it probably cost him his eternal life as well. Because he will help lead Israel astray a little bit. So he is going to go on his way. The angel of He Who Is said to Balaam, "Go with the men, but you speak only the word I tell you." So that's a repetition of the earlier instruction. So Balaam went with the princes of Balak. Now, nobody else saw the angel, only the donkey and Balaam. So everybody else is like wondering what's going on here. I mean, here is Balaam speaking into the air after the whole angel thing. And so now they're going to continue. He's got his two servants with him, but there's also the leadership council that came to collect him. Verse 36, when Balak heard that Balaam had come. Now keep in mind the timing of this. It's probably been 6 weeks to 2 months that this whole process has been going on. And Balak is chomping at the bit to get this curse thing taken care of, because he wants to be able to attack the Israelis and get rid of them so that he can have his property back, because they're actually living, they're camped on the plains of Moab down by the Jordan River that he used to control before it was stolen from him by Sihon the Amorite. So when Balak heard that Balaam had come, he went out to meet him at the city of Moab on the border formed with the Arnon at the extremity of the border. Now the Arnon is a wadi, a wet weather stream that drains into the north basin, the upper basin of the Dead Sea. It drains in from the east. And that became the northern border of Moab after the Ammonites attacked them and took over that property. So he comes to that border area to meet the prophet because he really wants to turn around and go back north so that the cursing can happen. So Balak said to Balaam, "Did I not send to you to call you? Why did you not come to me? Am I not able to honor you?" So he's like all over him. "What took you so long to get here? I made this service call a long time ago." Balaam said to Balak, "Behold, I have come to you. Have I now any power of my own to speak anything? The word that God puts in my mouth, that must I speak." So he tries to clarify from the very beginning, "Yes, sir, I am here as you requested, but you need to understand, he who is God Most High is the one that controls what I can or can't say." So verse 39, Balaam went with Balak. They came to Kiriath Huzot. We don't know exactly where that's at. And Balak sacrificed oxen and sheep and sent for Balaam and for the princes who were with him. So they have a welcoming worship ceremony and feast, I'm sure. In the morning, verse 41 says, Balak took Balaam and brought him up to Bamot Baal. Bamot has to do with the heights of something, and Baal has to do with the Lord. It's the Canaanite word for Lord or Master. It's often used to talk about the chief god of the Canaanites, Baal. And from there, he saw a fraction of the people. So he takes him to a place that apparently has got some sort of supernatural connection to it for the Canaanite gods. And it's overlooking the Jordan Valley. And from this place, Balaam and everybody can see a portion of the Israeli encampment, not the whole thing, because it's a massive encampment. And more than likely, they can only see the most western portion of the encampment. And the goal here is to curse that encampment, that group, so that they will not be victorious in any future battles that occur with Moab. It is, at this point, I need to remind you of something that's a little hard for us to get our minds wrapped around as modern-day people of faith. And that is, the ancient world had this concept that gods were local. They were localized. And that the farther you got away from the center of that god's influence, such as their main temple, their idol, their main city of worship. The farther you got from that center of power, the weaker the influence of that god became. And then, of course, you have multiple gods that these people believed in, and there was overlapping rings of influence that you had to contend with. And so what Balak is thinking here is he doesn't want to put Balaam too close to the encampment of Israel, because that's the power base of this God of Israel. And if you get too close, he has big-time control. And so more than likely, he takes him to this place that's been used for worship of the Canaanite god Baal as a power base to lend energy to the curse. Okay, so you got all that in mind? Let's pick up chapter 23 then. Balaam said to Balak, "Build for me here 7 altars, prepare for me here 7 bulls and 7 rams." Now, more than likely, there are a total of 7 leaders represented at this worship site. Balak and maybe 6 Midianite leaders and 6 Moabite leaders, or maybe it's 4 Moabite leaders and 2 Midianite leaders. But whatever the combination is, that's more than likely the reason for the 7 altars. And then, of course, the 7 bulls and 7 rams are going to be offered on these 7 altars. They are the typical sacrifices of power. So Balak did as Balaam had said, and Balak and Balaam offered on each altar a bull and a ram. And then Balaam said to Balak, "Stand beside your burnt offering." So stand next to the altar that you are associated with. "And I'm going to go. Perhaps he who is will come to meet me, and whatever he shows me, I'll tell you." So the sacrifices are burning on the altars. Balaam excuses himself to go a little ways away to talk to his God, which we know is he who is, God Most High, the God of the universe, the Creator God, the true God. So he went to a bare height, and God met Balaam. And Balaam said to him, "I have arranged the 7 altars, and I've offered on each altar a bull and a ram." Probably he used a similar technique whenever he did any of his work previous to this. "And so he who is put a word in Balaam's mouth and said, 'You return to Balak, and thus you shall speak.'" So the message has been given. So he returned to him, and behold, he and all the princes of Moab were standing beside his burnt offering, and Balaam took up this discourse, or his discourse, and said, so here we go, "From Aram Balak has brought me," so Aram is, you know, up there where Abraham came from, "the king of Moab from the eastern mountains." See, Moab is the eastern mountainous region right next to the Dead Sea. "Come, curse Jacob for me. Come, denounce Israel." That was the assignment. Then comes the amazing words. "How can I curse whom God has not cursed? How can I denounce whom he who is has not denounced? For from the top of the crags I see him. From the hills I behold him." This is typical Middle Eastern Israeli poetry that parallels things. It says something one way, and then it repeats it in a slightly different but synonymous way. So he talks about being up on the hill looking down. "Behold, a people dwelling alone and not counting itself among the nations." So the Israelis were special. They were not part of the goyim, the nations, that all had their own little gods and goddesses. Israel belonged to the Creator God. Verse 10, who can count the dust of Jacob or number the fourth part of Israel? Now that's part of the blessing of Abraham, wasn't it? They had been told through generations that God was going to make them like the dust of the earth, like the sand on the seashore, like the stars in the sky. They will be too hard to number. And so he puts that, at God's direction, into this blessing. And then he finishes up. Here's the big finish for the day. Let me die the death of the upright, and let my end be like his. See? So let me be as well blessed as Israel. And of course, Balak is not a happy camper. You know, he paid for a curse, and he didn't get his curse. Balak said to Balaam, what have you done to me? I took you to curse my enemies, and behold, you've done nothing but bless them. And he answered and said, must I not take care to speak what he who is puts in my mouth? So Balaam's response is, I told you, my responsibility is to say whatever it is God tells me to say. Verse 13, let's set up for our next time together. Balak said to him, please come with me to another place from which you may see them. You shall see only a fraction of them and shall not see all of them. Then curse them for me from there. And so now we see the evidence for the thinking that I was talking about earlier, that gods are localized. And so he hopes by moving the curse site to a different height overlooking the Israeli encampment, that maybe this will allow the curse to take place. Boy, is he wrong.